Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning, talking some AFC South and the Houston Texans. And to help us do that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in the great John McClain from HoustonTexans.com. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, John, I just want to start with the Texans and what they've done on the offensive side of the ball this offseason, kind of revamping their offensive line. They've added a couple receivers in the draft in Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel. So what do you make of kind of the revamping of the offense and how you feel about that group heading into this year?
Well, first of all, I think the Texans have a Super Bowl caliber defense, but they do not have a Super Bowl caliber offense, and I don't think they're a Super Bowl caliber team until they show that they have improvements in their offensive line. The way they lined up in the offseason program, they would have four new starters in their line, and they brought in five new players. Their highest draft pick was a second-round tackle from Minnesota, Ariante Erzrake, and then they traded for guard and signed three veterans. None of them are coming off a real good season. If they were, they wouldn't be available. So they traded Laremy Tunsil, their left tackle, who was their best lineman. They had nothing to do with his performance. They traded him to Washington. So until they show that they can do a better job of protecting C.J. Stroud, who not only was the second most sacked quarterback, but he was number one most pressured. And there was a stat in which players, at least one offensive lineman, beaten at the snap of the ball, the Texans had the highest percentage in the league. They fired their coach. They elevated their assistant line coach, Cole Popovich, brought in a new offensive coordinator, Nick Caley, from the Rams. They fired Bobby Slowick, which I was still surprised about. But Caley turned down a couple other offers to come here. He wants to be head coach and thinks playing with Stroud. And they've got a good running game in which they've added Nick Chubb to go with Joe Mixon and a couple of returning guys. So everything starts up front. I don't see wide receiver being an issue. They also signed veteran Christian Kirk, who had burned them repeatedly with the Jaguars when he was healthy. But it all starts up front. And I tell people, they act like Nick Caley, the coordinator and play caller, is the most important assistant coach on the team. And I tell them, no. The most important coach is Cole Popovich, the offensive line coach, because it doesn't matter who's calling the plays or what great play calls they are. If you can't protect your quarterback, you're just spinning your wheels.
Yeah, and it's actually, you touch on what I was going to ask you, John. The Slowick-Caley transition, I mean, it's amazing how much less intelligent apparently Bobby Slowick got in a year after, you know, he was one of the darlings, you know, the coaches out there that might get a head coaching job. So what's fair with him? Like you said, you struggle to block. A lot of people can look incompetent on the coaching level. And with Caley, who, of course, he was pass game coordinator, tight ends coach under McVay, we know a lot of really good coaches have come, you know, from McVay. What are your early impressions of him and how things might change schematically?
It was interesting. After the first season, which Texans were the surprise division winner, killed Cleveland in the first round before losing at Baltimore, Bobby Slowick interviewed for five head coaching jobs. I can't remember how many vacancies there were. He decided he needed another year of experience, came back, signed an extension. And then the one thing he did not do last year is he struggled to adjust to the adjustments that the defense has made. When you give a defensive coordinator's a whole offseason to watch tape and to watch a quarterback in an offense specifically, and they change how they attack you, you've got to adjust to their adjustments, and they didn't do it. And one reason was the offensive line. And they could run block, but they couldn't pass protect. And it was pathetic at times, and it was a lot of the same players from the year before. So Nick Caley, who had other opportunities, he is with the Patriots before he went to the Rams, and he's a great talker, a Canton, Ohio native, and he impresses everybody when he talks, whether it's the media or whether it's the players. But you guys know you can't tell squat in an off-season program when they don't put on pads or anything, and a poor old lineman, they can only play patty cake. So until they get to camp and put on the pads and we watch them hit, and when they have joint practices, we're not going to know if we look it up front and go, ah, they're better with a new coach and a new coordinator, or they're just like moving around a bunch of piles of you know what.
So, John, we know how much the rest of the AFC South beyond Houston has struggled recently with the Colts, the Jags, and the Titans. And Houston, the team to beat heading into this year in the division. How much of a gap, if any, do you think there is between Houston and the other division leaders, whether it's the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Bills, those type of teams?
Well, I don't think that they're on the same level as the best teams in the AFC. Now, I don't think Kansas City is going back to the Super Bowl because the Super Bowl loser never goes back other than New England one year. So I think it's going to come down to Baltimore, Buffalo. And the Texans beat Buffalo last year and lost to Baltimore two times. And, I mean, once, lost to Kansas City twice. So they're not there yet. But they should win the division for the third year in a row. And a lot of it has to do with the quarterbacks. I'm interested in seeing what Liam Cohen can do with Trevor Lawrence. And I'm interested to see if Anthony Richardson continues on a path to be one of the biggest busts in history, or Daniel Jones is going to be the starter. I think most of us probably think it'll be Jones, even if Richardson starts out. And then, of course, Cam Ward, who's from real close to Houston. And I tell people, the thing about Cam Ward, every year he's been in football, he's improved. And if that happened to him in high school as a senior at Incarnate Word in San Antonio and at Washington State and then Miami to where he became a star, there's no reason to expect that he won't continue on that same path. And even though he's a rookie and he's going to struggle. And so I think it's the Texans clearly number one. Anybody can finish number two. And really, who gets the best quarterback play and can keep the quarterback healthy has a chance to be number two. Right now, I don't see any of those teams having a winning record opposed to 2 years ago when three of them had winning records. I think it's still a division in progress.
Yeah, we were talking Jags yesterday, John. Specifically on them, what do you think about the Liam Cohen hire? What he did in Tampa, and you know, because obviously Doug Peterson came in there and immediately was like, okay, now Trevor Lawrence has a guy who's developed quarterbacks and you know, good offensive mind, and we know it of course went the other way. And at some point you're like, so was it on Peterson, or is there just a limitation with Lawrence that some people don't want to acknowledge? But what do you think about Cohen and Lawrence as a pairing?
Well, go back to what he did with Will Levis at Kentucky. And so he has done a really good job with the quarterbacks. And I don't feel bad for Lawrence, but ever since he won that national championship, everybody had it pegged as a generational prospect when he came out. The previous that way was Andrew Luck, and Luck was, except he retired early. Before that, it was John Elway. But Trevor Lawrence, and I know he got off to that slow start with the Urban Meyer fiasco, but if he's ever going to put it together, you would think this would be the season, but it's still up in the air. And until he proves he could do it on a consistent basis and stay healthy, there are going to be questions about it. He has certainly not been a generational quarterback. But the fact is, he is a former first overall pick. Cam Ward's a first overall pick. Daniel Jones was, what, like sixth? Anthony Richardson was fourth. It's not because this division is not able to use high picks on quarterbacks. But I'm really interested to see what Cohen does, because he was supposed to be a rising star, and we'll find out.
John, you brought up the Colts and Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones, and that's going to be really interesting to monitor how that goes. Obviously, you know, the passing of Jim Irsay, very sad to see, and now the new ownership setup that they've got in Indianapolis. So what do you just make of kind of the overall picture right now of where the Colts are, where things are headed and the idea that maybe they're looking for a new quarterback pretty soon is next year in the draft.
Everybody thinks that Jim Irsay's oldest daughter, who's been very involved with the team, wears headsets on game days to keep up with what's going on. And she was quoted as saying, when you're paying as much money as we pay, I like to know what we're paying the money for. So will she be like her dad? Will she show patience in Chris Ballard? I would think Chris Ballard, the GM's job's on the line. He's the one that selected Anthony Richardson. If they fall back or don't get any better, it's pretty obvious in Shane Steichen's third season, he could be under pressure. You always wonder with a new owner, in what direction is that owner going to go? I'm guessing Daniel Jones is going to be the starting quarterback, and he's done something Anthony Richardson hasn't done. He's had two really good seasons. He's had injury plague seasons, and then he's had at times terrible team in front of him. So he's gone from the Giants, and it might be good for him. They've got a good offense. My goodness, they got receivers. They got Jonathan Taylor, one of the best running backs in the league. I'm not sure about their offensive line or their defense, but they have the talent to do something. But maybe because Richardson started only 13 games at Florida, he's needed two seasons as a starter and part-time because he's hurt and benched. And this should be the season that we find out, is Anthony Richardson worth anywhere near what they invested in him, or does he go down as perhaps the second or third biggest bust in history? Ryan Leaf will always be number one at quarterback, Jamarcus Russell number two, and Anthony Richardson is in that territory right now, but he's got another season to come in, prove he can stay healthy and lead that offense. But when you're inaccurate in college, there's a good chance you're going to be inaccurate in the NFL, and he has been inaccurate in both.
So, John, I'm seeing tweets with interviews with Jimmy Johnson. Looks like you're working on a documentary. This sounds awesome. Tell us about this.
Well, it's a documentary I've been working on with three filmmakers about the Prairie View Interscholastic League, high school football in Texas before integration. There's 12 members of the Pro Football Hall of Fame who played in the PVIL. Three are alive: Joe Green, Ken Houston, and Emmett Thomas. And Jimmy Johnson's role in that, the 1960 Corpus Christi Miller team, won the first state championship for an integrated team in Texas. And the coach, who's 97 years old, we went to Lubbock, Texas, interviewed him, and he said the best player we played in that 13-1 season was one we beat in the semifinals, Port Arthur Jefferson, and that was middle linebacker Jimmy Johnson. So we went to Key Largo, spent a day with him talking about the times back then with the all-black PVIL and the all-white UIL and what it was like, and what it was like to lose to that team that beat Wichita Falls in the championship the next week. So we've interviewed current Hall of Famers, guys like Joe Green and Ken Houston. We've interviewed historians and media, and our goal is to have it out in March and try to have it in South by Southwest Film Festival. And we have a labor of love, and we think we have stumbled on something really big because we can't find other documentaries, and nobody has turned us down. And one of the cool things we've done, players like Eric Dickerson, Jacob Green, and Warren Moon, Mike Singletary, guys who told us they couldn't have done what they've done without standing on the shoulders of those players. And I asked Warren Moon, you grew up in L.A. What did that have to do with you? You didn't play in an all-black organization. He said, no, but the greatest high school quarterback, PVIL star Eldridge Dickey, who played at Tennessee State for John Merritt, he's the reason I played quarterback. And he said he was the first black quarterback taken in the first round in 68 by the Raiders. And Moon always said, every time somebody wanted to move me, I thought of Eldridge Dickey. And I used to read his stats at Tennessee State when he was in the Sporting News in the back of College Football Weekly. And so we've got a lot of cool stuff. Thank you for asking.
That's awesome.
Yep, really looking forward to that. That's going to be great. So looking forward to that. John, you're always a treat to have on the show. Appreciate your time as always. And we will talk to you soon, my friend.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, John.
The great John McClain on with us. We'll react to what John had to say. Take your thoughts on the AFC South. Plus, I want to get Joe's thoughts on a question I just had for McClain, which I think is very interesting heading into this year. We'll get into all that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. This week's Nashville's best deal is Body Rock. Plank, lunge, twist, and push your limits with Body Rock's dynamic muscle sculpting Pilates-inspired classes designed to rock your body to the core. Get half off a $50 gift card at thegamenashville.com/deals to use at any of Body Rock's four Nashville locations while supplies last. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Appreciate John McClain for being with us in the last segment. We will have Charles Robinson at 8 o'clock. So a big day on the program for high-level Houston-based NFL writers on the program today.
Yeah, a lot of great NFL analysis and reporting coming out of Houston, Texas.
A lot on our show today.
How about that?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
All on the show.
We will have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up at 7:45, in which apparently there's something he's really upset about, according to the grid I'm reading here. So I'm looking forward to that coming up at 7:45. I have no idea what it is, so it's going to be exciting.
I'm pissed.
Okay, we'll get into that coming up a little bit later here in the program. So I threw out the, you know, we've had the how good are the Texans in comparison to the rest of kind of the AFC elite teams discussion already this offseason. My question for you right now is if you had to pick one, you can pick one team that is going to break through and get to the Super Bowl the first, that's not named the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC. And I realize that Cincinnati did this a few years ago. But Kansas City has now gone on a run since then where they're just going to the Super Bowl all the time. So who would be the team that you would pick, Joe Rexroad, if you could only pick one that is the team that finally breaks through Kansas City and gets to the Super Bowl out of the AFC? Is it Baltimore? Is it Buffalo? Is it Cincinnati? Is it somebody else? Is it Houston? What would your answer to that be if you could only pick one to get through Kansas City?
Well, I'm kind of with McClain. He named the two that I think it has to be one of those two. Like Cincinnati, they just got an absurd season from Joe Burrow and didn't make the playoffs. Their defense was terrible. Their best defensive player's holding out. I just can't go there. Like, do I feel like Cincinnati's due for a bounce back year where they get in the playoffs and can be a threat? Yes, but I can't get to Cincinnati in its current state actually being a contender as great as Burrow is. So it's Buffalo or Baltimore, and it's a great question. You know, I feel like maybe there's a little – this is one of those things where it's like you got to remove yourself because my heart says Baltimore. I would love to see Derek get that opportunity. Derek's such a great player, and it'd be great to see him get to the Super Bowl. It would be great to see Lamar Jackson get to a Super Bowl. I just think they're as fun a team as there is to watch. Not that Buffalo isn't fun to watch.
They just became less likable yesterday, but yes.
Yeah, well, I was actually going to ask you about that. Like, I know you're not a huge Jair Alexander. You're not sad to see him go, but I also feel like maybe that's a nice ad for them.
If he's healthy, he'll be fine. I mean, if he could stay on the field, it's a great ad for them. You know, we'll see if he can do it. I mean, he's only 28, so if he can stay on the field, he will be a good player for them. I'm interested to see how that part of it goes. And obviously there's a connection there between Jair Alexander and Lamar Jackson having both played at Louisville together.
Right. So I don't think I'm voting with my heart here. I think I give them a slight edge. But I think it's very close. And I mean, John McClain, he's just stating it like fact. We know the Chiefs aren't going to the Super Bowl. Because the loser doesn't ever go back. I mean, I think the Chiefs can be the team that breaks that.
They can go back.
But, yeah, I think it is the year for either Baltimore or Buffalo. I think that's just how it should go. And I would pick that. I would pick one of them.
Didn't last year kind of feel like the year for Buffalo?
At it times, did.
Kind of felt
yeah,
like.
Well, especially when they beat them.
It did.
And they beat them. And, yeah.
Like, last year kind of felt like the year it was going to happen.
At times I thought it was the year for Baltimore too. You know, at times I was like, oh, that's just the best team. But, yeah, that's the problem is that we all think it's going to happen and then Patrick Mahomes happens.
Yeah, it's interesting we're having this discussion because if I asked you right now, if you could pick two teams that you think are the Vegas odds FanDuel Sportsbook favorite to win the Super Bowl, what two teams would you pick?
This is the whole league.
The whole league.
To win the Super Bowl, I mean, I'm probably going to go Eagles-Chiefs.
The two favorite, they're co-favorites to win the Super Bowl this year, according to FanDuel Sportsbook, at plus 700 odds for both of them, the Baltimore Ravens and the Buffalo Bills.
Wow. Okay.
They are co-favorites. Kansas City and Philadelphia are right behind them at plus 750. They're tied right behind them. But,
and you said those two are plus 7?
Yeah. Ravens and Bills are plus 700. There you go.
That's very interesting. Very, very interesting.
Not that that means anything when you get on the field at the end of the day, but that kind of goes in support of, I mean, it feels like it's one of their years to break through. I would pick Buffalo. I just, Josh Allen and the way that team played last year, you know, they were right there in the AFC title game. I think at some point they're going to be the ones that break through. I think either one of them can do it. Like, I need to see Derrick Henry have another year close to like he had last year. I still have some questions about Baltimore and their receiving core. Although, you know, they got D-Hop now. They got all these former Titans walking around over there. So, you know, maybe D-Hop, even though he didn't do anything in Kansas City, maybe he'll go to Baltimore and he'll get back in the time machine. He'll get 900 yards this year in Baltimore.
I wouldn't be surprised if he does something, you know, helps out a little bit. Yeah, how old is he now? I mean,
he's not as old as you think.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, even when he was here, he was like 32, right? And you thought he was 36.
He's 33. He'll be 30. He just turned 33 a couple weeks ago.
So he was 31 and 32 playing here.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, you never know. You know, you can get rejuvenated by, you know, a team. And again, just playing in that offense. Like, there's just so many things that are open for you because of, like, the conflict Lamar Jackson puts you in. So I don't hate that ad either. Yeah, then I think, you know, one of the things that I would lean Baltimore's way on is coaching. You know, I mean, Harbaugh has actually been there.
He's won.
The non-super goofy Harbaugh we're talking. We're talking John, not Jim, who continues to say goofy stuff out in L.A. But, you know, I mean, look, I just think McDermott still has to prove that he can get it done. Some of these things that have happened to them, it's hard for me to pin on him. But at the same time, I think that there's a coaching advantage there in Baltimore over Buffalo.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Your thoughts on the AFC? Which team would you pick to break through and get past Kansas City? Baltimore? Buffalo? Someone else? We'll take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode, which he is apparently unbelievably fired up about, coming up here in just a few minutes. So we'll get into that. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Jeff in Nebraska on the text line says, Jim Harbaugh might be weird, but I could see the Chargers winning the West and making some kind of playoff run. There's no denying that he's a good coach. So Jeff throwing the Chargers in the mix in the AFC. Joe, what do we think of that?
I mean, first of all, yeah, Harbaugh's a good coach. There's no doubt. Now, you know, you look at what he did at Stanford, really impressive. Obviously, what he did with the Niners, really impressive. And he won a natty with Michigan. Now, what he did at Michigan for the first several years was getting himself on the verge of being fired, getting himself a huge reduction in pay. And then Connor Stallions.
And then calling in the military and having a spy operation.
That's right, calling in, yeah, the Navy SEALs to help him cheat. He certainly
passing along information to Shane Beamer.
Certainly blurred the lines on multiple fronts. But I'm not – of course, he is a good coach. It's going to be really interesting to see how that works out. I mean, look, his track record as a football coach and Justin Herbert's talent level – If you're a Chargers fan, you should. In the next couple years, you should expect big things, like big things. Like you should be contending, you know, for a spot in the Super Bowl. So we'll see. That's a lofty expectation, but I think that's why Harbaugh, like, that's that job was appealing to him, was appealing to Mike Vrabel, who by reporting finished second to Harbaugh because of Herbert.
Chargers, by the numbers in the on the FanDuel Sportsbook, have the 6 best odds in the AFC to win the Super Bowl. Baltimore, Buffalo tied at 1, then Kansas City, and then it's Cincinnati, Houston, and then the Chargers. So Chargers coming in at number 6 on that front. So,
okay,
Adam in Portland also having a vote for the Chargers. One texter says it's not about beating Kansas City to get to the Super Bowl. It's about beating Kansas City and the refs to get to the Super Bowl. So the ref conspiracy lives on heading into this year.
Yeah. How come the refs didn't help out in the Super Bowl?
It didn't go very well for the refs in Kansas City in the Super Bowl.
Did not. The whole league had to, apparently, had to eat it there. Caleb says, yeah, Michigan definitely cheated. Won't convince you otherwise. Helped South Carolina beat Tennessee. I'll die in that hill. Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe they just bad team, honestly, went about scoring touchdowns on 11 straight possessions or whatever the hell it was.
Some things starting to make a whole lot more sense from that night.
Yeah. I have asked multiple staff members, by the way, that were on that Tennessee staff if they thought that was the case. And I didn't get back like, oh, there's no question. But it, like, yeah, it's something we've talked about. It's like – you know, but it's like – I mean –
we have discussed it.
It's circumstantial as opposed to anything that they.
Yeah,
I think if Tennessee had any sort of smoking gun on it, there'd be stuff written more about that. But certainly possible.
Votes for the Ravens and Buffalo, obviously, as the top favorites. Eli says if Cincinnati gets any form of defense, they're going to win it all.
Great.
Are they going to get any form of defense?
Yeah.
I don't know.
If the Titans get any form of offense and defense, are they not winning at all? I think they might.
I mean, it is kind of amazing to go back and look at the numbers that Burrow put up last year and think about that team not making the playoffs. Like, it's pretty incredible. Like, that's how bad they were on the defensive side of the ball. Now, apparently, Trey Hendrickson and the Bengals are back at the negotiating table in discussions.
It might be getting a little bit thawed.
Right. So we'll see what happens on that front. But having said that, Joe, last time I checked, Trey Hendrickson was on that defense last year, and they were still that bad. So we'll see if there's any sort of significant improvement one way or the other.
They were straight buns. They were the Bungles on defense. So, yeah, you certainly need him. But you're going to have to really turn things around. You can't – I mean – you know, defense wins championships, a little bit overplayed. I think in a lot of sports now, offense wins championships. But terrible defenses don't win championships. I'll stick with that maxim and feel pretty good about it.
I'll toss another one, another couple teams at you that I don't know that I would classify as Super Bowl contenders, but are very interesting to me heading into this year. One, obviously, being Pittsburgh with Aaron Rodgers at the helm. Number two, what about Denver? Because Denver has Bo Nix in year two. You've got, even though sometimes I think he's just absolutely insufferable, you have Sean Payton who is, I mean, there's no denying he's a great coach. He's a great coach.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got those two, better play from Bo Nix than I thought possible last year in his rookie year. A defense that's really, really good. Titans are going to see this firsthand in week one coming up. You know, they're in the same division as Kansas City, so that's a big problem. They're in the same division as the Chargers. So, I mean, that one's got a chance to be a pretty darn good division with those three teams, and now you've got Geno Smith quarterbacking the Raiders, so we'll see what all happens on that front. But what do you make of Denver in year two with Bo Nix? Is this going to be a continuation? Is Bo Nix a sophomore slump candidate to you? How do you view the Broncos?
Yeah, no, I think, look, they can – very good. I think the roster's pretty solid, very good defense. I do feel like Bo Nix, it just seems to me like he should be this year's like C.J. Stroud. Again, it's not like Stroud had a terrible year, by the way. But O.C. got fired. You know, there were other issues. I just and again, this is like – I mean, it's almost like the Indiana Pacers for me. Like, no matter how much evidence there is, I just can't believe it based on what I had seen previously. I still can't believe Bo Nix is going to be like a really good quarterback in the NFL. I just can't believe it. So that's probably, that may be on me. And if he keeps progressing this year, then it's just, it's a great example of how people can get better. You know, John McClain talked earlier in the show about a great point about Cam Ward, another way to look at it. Like he seems to be getting better year after year after year. If that continues, man, that's good for the Titans. I mean, Bo Nix, you think about, like, talking NFL when that guy was moving on from Auburn and stuff, it would have been laughable, just laughable, that he would ever be, to me, even be in the NFL, let alone be a starter, let alone be, like, a promising young quarterback. So kudos to him, but I am skeptical that there's not going to be some kind of regression this year.
Bo Nix last year, right around 3,800 yards, 29 touchdowns, 12 picks. Completed 66.3% of his passes. It's pretty good. Really good numbers.
And, you know, it's like when coming out of Oregon, a lot of the talk was, well, if he's in the right scheme and it's, you know, he's good at, he's just, he gets the ball out, the short stuff, get it in playmaker's hands, play point guard. I'm like, yeah, great. But, like, you have to be more than that to be a good NFL quarterback. Well, I think he probably is more than that. How much more than that? They are definitely, you know, a really interesting team. You know, another thing Adam and Portland brought up, Robbie, and I think this is a – someone else said this the other day. I never got to it. You know, we always talk about dynasties. But, I mean, if the Titans – how many teams are horrific 3 years in a row in the NFL? Could the Titans be on the verge of a reverse dynasty? Now, I think you probably could find some great stretches from the Browns.
Jets.
I promise you that, yeah, the Lions have had some wonderful stretches. That's an interesting question. I'd like to know the, again, 3-14 is bottoming out. So what are we talking about? The last 2 years combined, they are 8, right? Did they win 5 the year before?
I think 6 the year before.
Okay, see, the 6 the year before is a little bit, that kind of messes up. 9 wins in 2 years. But if they have like 12 in 3 years, let's say.
Yeah.
How many teams have had a 12-win in 3 years stretch? And granted, there's more opportunity now, too, in this recent era with 17 games.
Well, I mean, and also, like, the Titans have never really approached being just horrible for 3 years. Now,
they had the 14 and 15, and then, boom, 16, rise up. Is this year going to be like 16, or is it going to be new territory?
Now, they did have, like, I'm looking through their history right now, they had 6-10, 7-9, and then 2-14, 3-13. So not good.
No.
But they weren't like, you know, abject failures in every aspect of trying to play football.
7-9 has made the playoffs.
Right. And they were second in their division that year, by the way, being second, 7-9.
AFC South tradition. So
it is a tradition there. You know, 6-11 2 years ago, 3-14 last year. Can you get back to, I don't know, 7 wins this year?
That'd be progress. And you would certainly distance yourself from some of the worst stretches. I got to see like how many the Lions had their 0-16 and 0-8. What they do on the other side? I know that the next year with Stafford, they did win a few games, but not that many. But people were still excited about Matthew Stafford because he was obviously good, which is possible with Cam Ward this year. By the way,
the Lions. Man, think about this 2 year stretch. 08, 0-16, 09, 2-14.
That's right. They only won 2.
Yeah.
They only won 2. And yet, I promise you, in the 2-win season, people were like, oh, Matthew Stafford's a real deal. That's how bad they were.
Man.
He could look good and get you excited, and they won 2 games.
The 2000s Lions. 01, 2-14, 02, 3-13, 05, 5-11, 06, 3-13, and 0-16 and 2-14 tossed in there. Pretty good stuff.
Oh, man. Matt Millen just – what receiver am I drafting this year? Incredible. He finally got one right with Calvin Johnson at least.
We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. He's apparently really mad. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3 the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
There's a one guy that acted like that in the NBA at that point. His name was Isaiah Thomas. You worship him like a hero.
You're out of your mind. There is no way that LeBron will ever be Jordan. Nobody will ever be Jordan, okay?
Of course you think LeBron's better.
Okay, LeBron's a better rebounder and passer.
Not into the if this, if that type of scenarios. If worms had machine guns, then birds wouldn't be scared of him.
Call me when LeBron has 6 championships.
Is that your only argument?
It's the only argument I need, Sean.
That's the only argument I need, Sean.
You're an idiot.
Want to say hi to somebody?
Yes, my wife, Anne Marie, our friends and family back in Ohio, Colorado, and Virginia, and LeBron James.
Hi, LeBron.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode. I've been looking forward to this all show because he's really mad. I don't know what he's mad about. So, Joe, the floor is yours.
Yeah, it's. I'm not ranting about LeBron over Jordan. I will say, I mean, you know, we're about to enter the part of the summer where we probably can do things like argue about LeBron versus Jordan. I will just say this. This was a super hot debate in like sports talk 8 years ago, if you remember. 8 years ago, LeBron took that Cleveland team that had no business winning. I think it was Game 7 in Boston. And they won it, and he dominated the game. And it was like, oh, the Nick Wrights of the world. Like, it was just, it became, you know, Stephen A., everybody, you know, LeBron, Jordan, this huge debate. And I think it was close then. When he won that game, before he won that game, I personally was like, nah, Jordan's still the best. That game flipped me. But it's funny that 8 years later, and I understand, like, you know, he's not winning titles now, but 8 years later, like just a year ago, he was one of the two best players in the Olympics at his age in the world. And yet people are like, I feel like there's less momentum for him. There should be more. Should there not be?
I agree.
But see, Ian's mashup got me off topic. So let me just tell you how I got triggered.
Ian, come on.
Man, I just put them together. Sometimes random. I apologize.
That's how David Reed decided to award Jared his fake win yesterday. Is Michael Jeffrey Jordan is the best player. That's fine. We can debate this another day. But I'm going to talk about how I got triggered. So I got to call out Easton Freeze. I like Easton. Does a good job covering the Titans, A to Z Sports. And I don't know why this triggered me. Maybe just because it's like from an unexpected source. Like you expect some people say stuff like this, but I'm just looking, and I don't even really like look at Twitter that much anymore. But I'm you know, there's the clip yesterday of Caitlin Clark getting knocked over. This is Easton Freeze's tweet that just set me off. Turned me. I don't even get into Twitter arguments with people anymore, and yet I did with Easton. He said, quote, "These WNBA players hell-bent on treating Caitlin like this might actually be the biggest morons on the entire planet. She is your walking, talking meal ticket. She is the messiah of your sport. You have to be an astonishing idiot to treat her this way. At least the hockey players who played in the Gretzky era knew where their bread was buttered," end quote. There's a lot to unpack there. Because I forgot how the players in the Gretzky era and the NHL were like, Wayne, the great one. Whoa, here, come on down, buddy. Why don't you just score on me? It's like, so I went off and he said, and then it's like, I don't understand why we're still doing this, Robbie. Help me out. Why are we still acting like the WNBA is not a sport? Again, I'll say what I said last year again. Magic and Larry Bird saved the NBA. It was such a bad product in the late 70s that the NBA finals were not on live television. They were on tape delay. Magic and Bird saved the league. Their rivalry, their NCAA championship game, Michigan State, Indiana State, remains the highest rated basketball game of all time and will always be that. Then they came in the league. They started a rivalry. Everything changed. David Stern, there's a lot of factors, but they saved the league. I promise you not one damn dude in that league ever said, that's our meal ticket. Magic, have yourself a layup, bro. What? No, it's sports. Caitlin Clark gets thrown to the ground sometimes and gets hit. She also talks crazy trash and slaps people herself. And we're acting like she needs to be treated with kid gloves. I don't understand the narrative. I don't get it. What are we missing? What am I missing, Robbie? Why are people still saying stupid crap like this? It's sports.
You weren't kidding. You are mad.
It's so freaking dumb. And then, like, Jared, since we're going to, you know, bring up Jared, you know, of course, his take is, you know, the majority of players in the league, in the WNBA, would vote to get rid of her to have a worse situation because they hate her so much. I mean, Angel Reese might.
Maybe, yeah, I think she might.
Maybe two others? You tell me the whole rest of the league? So if the rest of the league doesn't just get out of Caitlin's way and let her do whatever she wants and doesn't react to her trash talk and doesn't react to her putting 30 on them and beating them in a competitive professional sport, that means that they want her out of the league entirely? What are we talking about?
I don't get that part of it. I will say this, and I think we touched on this the other day. What we do see in, I think, a lot of professional sports is, like, the officials know who their stars are and do a good job, for the most part, of protecting those stars.
That's fair.
And they do not do a good job of that in the WNBA. And Stephanie White, I mean, that's why she's getting as mad as she's getting the other night, is because of that. Like, it's the officiating allowed that game the other day to get totally out of control. And I do feel like they've not gotten a great handle on that. And I have not seen the fine that Stephanie White has either gotten or is going to get. I imagine one is coming if it's not come to this point. But when she said everybody's getting better except the officials, and Caitlin Clark was over there just nodding her head, I was like, wow, I don't know if I've ever heard a coach actually say that.
That's totally fair. But I'll also, let's go back to, let's go back to Michael Jordan, the meal ticket of the NBA. And my beloved Detroit Pistons beat the crap out of him. And you know what? Did Jordan get some star calls? Yeah. Also, did he get the crap beat out of him and all the Pistons get ejected every game? No. And when the Pistons, I mean, when Bill Laimbeer, like, took shot after shot at Larry Bird and all those guys, did he get thrown out? No. Also, when Robert Parrish just double-punched him in the face, it was like, hey, guys, that's a foul. A different time and all that, fine. But again, we act like everyone should be just so, thank you, Caitlin. Like, you just do whatever you want to do. Nothing that has happened, by the way, has even gotten her hurt. She hurt her calf that had nothing to do with a hit. I still think that the hit she took the other day, it was ejectable, but, like, we're acting like it was some kind of crazy, insane hit. No, it was not. I mean, Phil says, calm down, Joe. Caitlin's the entire league. Okay. Should the other professional basketball players in the league not try to beat her? Do you watch her and the trash she talks? I love it. I love everything she does. And by the way, you mentioned her nodding at what Stephanie White said, but I've never heard her cry about this one time.
No.
Not one damn time. It is pro sports. And they are competitors, and it's a constant back and forth if you watch it. And so, yeah, if you're on the other team, you want to beat her. You want to shut her up. You want to prove her wrong. What is wrong with that?
No, I don't think anything's wrong with that. Like, I don't have any problem with any of that stuff. I look at it, and I do think better officiating has got to get – and we've talked about this not just with the WNBA, but sometimes if you don't get a hold on some of these things, you get – what happens the other day where it just gets totally out of control and you've got a borderline brawl at the end of the game out there.
Yeah, the refs have to be better. I mean, again, this text says she's essentially getting persecuted by the league that she's made popular. Really? Because here and there she gets bumped? Like, watch sports. Somehow this is not sports. Everything else is sports. This is not sports.
Andy Ben says, Joe just hates all things Indiana. Straight facts.
If the Indiana Fever are on, I will probably be watching. I love Caitlin. I think she's amazing. And so, again, I get the idea that, like, people should appreciate her, and that's fine. I'm sure a lot of people do. But you're asking people to not be competitors, and I don't see that being asked of anybody else in any other league.
615-737-1025. That lived up to the billing. Rex Rhodes mad about it. And there are some thoughts coming in on the text line that are going to continue to make him mad. We'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. Get his thoughts on all things Titans in the NFL. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.